Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Duke Health, offering food, medication delivery, and transportation to communities hardest hit by COVID-19. It's all through a special partnership with North Carolina agencies and 16 community-based organizations. Learn more about Duke's COVID-19 response at dukehealth.org. And Hungry Harvest, delivering farm-fresh produce and kitchen staples to your door starting at $15. Every delivery fights food waste and supports local hunger-solving organizations. HungryHarvest.net.
This is Tested from WUNC, a look at how we're responding to the day's challenges in North Carolina and the South. I'm Kamaya Truitt. Okay, y'all, that North Carolina summer is cranked up to full heat, but the sidewalks aren't the only thing sizzling out there. Each year, WUNC invites a group of talented young folks to step up behind the mic and document stories from their communities. And as students have adapted to the continued obstacles brought on by the pandemic, so has WUNC's Youth Reporting Institute. Last year, we had our very first virtual institute, but we love taking it to the next level. So for 2021, WUNC's Youth Reporting Institute went hybrid. Youth reporters had access to recording equipment, audio editing software, virtual training, and dove into radio journalism through Zoom and on-the-ground reporting. We threw all of that into a mixing bowl and got a summer full of skill building and unlocked new ways to make connections with our communities.
It's been 2.5 years.
Thank you, everybody. I want to let you know this is my first time performing ever.
I remember when I was first invited to be a youth reporter back during the initial launch in 2012. And would you believe I turned it down? Teenage angst at its best. But my mom had a come to Jesus moment with me. I reapplied in 2013, got the job, and for 8 years, I've been working to amplify the voices of our community. I mean, that's the whole point, right? To shake up the monotony of public radio, put some diverse voices on the air, and tell stories we rarely hear.
Luego hay unas enfrijoladas que no tienen nada dentro, es la pura tortilla.
Pues sí, me puedo imaginar eso.
Pues nomás la tortilla.
Doblada.
Doblada.
When you get to this much fabric, it's good to take your time so the needle doesn't break.
I've helped build this institute with program manager Allison Swaim by meticulously choosing students with diverse stories that highlight their environmental, economic, ethnic, and racial identities. I've stuck around this long because their stories are nothing short of amazing. I mean, where else can you dive deep into sustainable fashion and how climate change affects our dinner plates? Every summer is a new adventure into communities I have never heard from before.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yay.
So today, I'll be sharing some conversations I recently had with 4 out of our 10 youth reporters.
One time I rode a horse. It was crazy. The cows, I just pet them and stuff because they don't do a lot anyway. So.
You really have a lizard?
Yeah, his name is Mushu.
You never show. Oh, that's cool. I'm a dragon, not lizard.
I'm going to send a picture afterwards now. I have to show
Please
him off. He's
do.
My baby.
Go ahead, Ed. What did you have for breakfast? Check your levels.
I just woke up like an hour ago. So I just had a banana.
Are you frozen? Wait.
Okay, I thought you were frozen. I talked to them about the stories they pursued, chopping it all up, and why they got involved in this dope project in the first place. So let's get it popping with Ellie.
Hi, my name is Ellie Stevens. I use she, her pronouns. I'm 18 years old, and I'm a youth reporter.
Now, this summer wasn't Ellie's first rodeo as a youth reporter. She was a part of the crew last year, too, when the pandemic had everything on lock. There was no way to get out in the field, but it didn't stop Ellie's flow. Whether it's doing an interview over Zoom or in person, she's always been driven by the power of stories and storytelling.
And just kind of the art of journalism, because I think especially now, it's really important in kind of both informing citizens and also creating an empathy for other people and their stories in a time where the world is very polarized. And so I just kind of had a passion for storytelling and journalism, and I really wanted an opportunity to be able to practice that and tell some stories of my own. So,
well, yeah, thank you for that beautiful segue. Walk me through it. What did you decide to cover this year?
This year, so I interviewed my grandmother, and essentially the core of the story was about how she was able to find a community in a place that was once foreign to her. So she immigrated from Spain to the United States when she was 21. And so there's kind of a biographical element in that she talks about her life, you know, the immigration process, like, and her romance with my grandfather. But at the core, she talks about the Spanish card game she plays called Cinquillo, and how that game has given her community and kind of a little piece of Spain in the United States.
Okay, now when you're in the money, you don't have to worry about money anymore.
Well, I know these ladies. I've known them since actually 1980. And, well, we just started, we thought that it would be fun, you know, for the ladies from different countries, from Spanish speaking, and to get together and keep up the tradition of El Cinquillo, which, you know, I used to play in Spain when I was a little girl, and with my family and my sisters, my aunts, everybody.
Fire. Walk me through the process of, you know, being on the ground for the first time, recording, getting up in the mix for real, for real.
Yeah, so you're the one with the equipment and everything, so you have to kind of, like, introduce what's happening, and, like, you know, some people might not be, like, completely comfortable at first just because it is recording equipment. So I found that, like, once you kind of walk them through, like, hey, this is what I'm doing, you make sure you're super upfront about it, and just kind of try and get them comfortable, they kind of forget it's there after the first, you know, 30 minutes, and they're able to just kind of be comfortable and be themselves. And so it was a card game, and I recorded, like, that game lasted forever. So, like, 5 hours of the card game. Yeah, so it was just kind of getting them comfortable, being really upfront about what was happening, and, you know, just knowing, like, I have permission to be here. This is, you know, what I'm doing. Just making sure you explain everything, all that.
Always. She's always stay the money away from us. That's what you reach.
Yeah, but this was a little easy and then also a little difficult. Who did you talk to for this story?
So I talked to my grandmother. So that was easy in the way that, you know, I know her really well, and it's someone that I feel comfortable with. But I would say it was hard in that the same way, like, I know her really well. And so, you know, when she would maybe get emotional when talking about something, it was really hard for me to kind of see that. Mm-hmm. And so just kind of trying to, you know, stay in the story and continue on was something that was definitely an interesting kind of line, like, how far do you, like, continue with a certain topic? So,
So walk me through one of those moments and how you got through it. Like, what was the process of drawing that line, if you will? And what was the situation?
Yeah. So in the interview, when we were talking about, one of the questions I asked was, like, essentially, like, take me to the day you left Spain and describe that. And so that was obviously a very emotional day. And when she was talking about it, she started kind of getting choked up talking about it.
Yeah, I remember the day I left, like if it was today. I remember saying goodbye. And I mean, even now, I get emotional about it. And I remember especially when you know, I left my father. I was extremely close to my father. I was close to everybody. But he started crying. You know, he was a grown man, which I'd never seen him cry. And it was really, I was heartbroken, and I knew my family was too. It was really one of the hardest things I had to do in my life.
And so I just kind of paused and just let her kind of be in that emotion, talk it out, instead of like being like, oh my gosh, like, it's okay, like comforting her, just kind of just let her be in that, and then continued on like once she was ready. So it's kind of just like letting her sit in the moment and think about it and what she wanted to say, that I felt like the pauses are really where you have to, like, they often have things that they're still thinking about that they want to say, so you've got to have those pauses to let them sit in that. And yeah.
And then the patience too, you know, I think that you have really taken all of this on. And I will say that your pitch this year was really surprising to me, because, you know, usually you're a heavy youth focused reporter. Like, even when you were trying to produce stuff throughout the winter, a lot of it had to focus on students and how they were coping with the pandemic and dealing with, you know, virtual learning versus in-person learning. But this was quite a turn. So I guess why? Why tell this story out of all of the ones that you could have told?
Honestly, I kind of was twofold. At first, I kind of wanted to try something new than what I had, you know, kind of been doing before. And then second, with the pandemic, and, you know, it's definitely a time for reflection. And I just really wanted to know more about my grandma and her experience. You know, with all the technology and everything, I feel like nowadays, we don't just sit down and really have conversations with people. You know, like, I thought I knew my grandmother very, very well. But having this conversation with her and talking to her, I learned so many things that I never would have known if I didn't sit down and just talk to her about her experiences. So it was something that was really rewarding, and I'm really glad that I did it. Also, just sitting in on the Cinquillo game, the Spanish card game, I just really felt the ladies have such fun personalities, and they just love to laugh and laugh. And like I mentioned earlier, like, we stayed there for 5 hours. Like, it was very long. And just very fun and supportive. And I just felt like very connected to that, like, you know, the Spanish culture of like a lot of laughter, really long dinners, like going out like really late at night. I just felt like I understood, like that made me feel understood, and that like that's something I also feel very connected to, that laughter, that light, that, yeah.
What do you hope people take away from listening to this story?
You know, I just hope that it shows people, like, you can learn a lot when you sit down and have conversations with people, even who you think you know really well, you know, to encourage people to have those conversations, especially if you have a side of your identity or heritage that you don't really feel connected to or don't know very well, to really explore that. I would say would be the main takeaway. And then also just to enjoy the Cinquillo and the ladies laughing and making jokes and all that.
These ladies know what they're doing.
All right. Next, let's check in with another stellar person who wielded the mic this summer.
My name is William Townsend. I am 15. I go to Southeast Raleigh High School. I'm a sophomore, and my favorite color is red.
That's a fun fact. Your favorite color is red.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
William is always trying to play it cool, but his investment in his story is out of this world. His sophomore year started at Southeast Raleigh High in the middle of our program, but he still made time for final touches and even a quick chat. So I caught up with him after a long day at school while he was at home preparing for dinner. And let me tell you, William produced a fire story this year.
I decided to produce a story about my freedom and where it comes from and where it's at. And the story mainly took place in Mississippi, where most of my relatives live, a lot of my relatives live, and just experiencing the true freedom down there. And kind of the underlying theme of freedom, where it was kind of just to express that freedom and kind of find your freedom and your identity. It doesn't matter where it's at. It's what you think it is. and it's where you find it.
Was Mississippi a place you thought you would find that freedom?
Not gonna lie, not at all. I just didn't really think it is. Even when I first went down around 4 years ago, I was shocked even then, just the things they do out there, like, as you'll hear in my story, like riding the four-wheeler, popping fireworks so freely, doing all these things that you just can't really do sometimes up here. Raleigh, Nightvale. It was also being on this land that my family has owned and everything for such a long time, because 4 decades is a pretty long time to own a farm. Doesn't really matter what skin color you are at all, but even my aunt being a black woman owning that land herself was just amazing to see.
We have always had our freedom, even though things happen.
And just the things that I could do on it and just be free was just amazing.
Yeah, that is. I guess so. You did some crazy stuff that I really would like for you to say on air. Can you talk to me about the wild adventures of capturing the audio that you got?
Capturing the audio while recording, especially my four-wheeler audio, which you're going to hear on the story, I was actually riding it as I was recording. My cousin was driving. It was pretty crazy. And I wish I did get some clips of him like teaching me how to ride again, because I forgot, not being able to go down there for so many years. Woo! But just getting those sound bites, and especially with the fireworks, I was popping fireworks as I was recording as well. So it was pretty dangerous, I can't lie. Like, I'm pretty sure they probably didn't want me doing that, but to capture the sound, you gotta just do it.
I gotta get on that next, man.
You wanna get on?
You know, here in Mississippi, a lot of people have to rent their places and stuff. Well, with us, the Lord bless my father to be able to just, you know, we didn't have fancy nothing, but we was able to be on our own.
So that was me asking my aunt about how she grew up and how her grandfather owning land back then, which was even crazier because he was a man in probably around the 20s, 30s, owning his own land with his family being able to be on it.
We didn't have to just get up and go help so and so and so. My parents didn't. When we were young, they went to their field, and they did go help the neighbors. It was neighbors helping neighbors back then, and they did it with no charges.
I think that that is an amazing element that you capture, you know, the layers of freedom that you can experience even in a place that a lot of people think, you know, Mississippi, you think Deep South, you think not free. I mean, you even have this point in your script where you say something to that. Can you talk me through that?
Basically, the main thing around that was when people think of Mississippi, it comes with heavy stigmatisms of racism and stereotypes. And using this piece to kind of break down those stereotypes, but also show you that they are still there in some places, and you need to be aware of that. But the overall meaning behind that is just don't go and judge something or somebody based off of things you've heard about it, really.
As William polishes up his story, he's also grinding hard in his sophomore year at Southeast Raleigh High School. We'll be right back with more from our great youth reporters.
There's a lot to appreciate about the natural world around us.
But take a closer look, and nature will start to reveal an unexpected side.
invasive creatures with origin stories that start thousands of miles away.
Creep is a podcast devoted to their impressive survival and their impact on our lives.
Listen and subscribe on your favorite audio app. Learn more at wunc.org/creep.
While some of our youth reporters honed in on the stories of their families, others decided to tackle the issues they face in school.
My name is Nasiba Bedreddin. I am 16 years old. I attend Athens Drive Magnet High School. And one fun fact about me is I have a lizard that I love very much. So I've always had kind of a love for writing and also journalism, especially since I think I was 12 years old. I remember listening to podcasts and radio shows with my mom while she did chores and stuff around the house and I would help. And it was kind of those stories that kind of got me through the day. And so I figured whenever I was older, hey, this was important to you whenever you were younger, so maybe you won't will find solace in it again. And whenever I saw the opening for a WNC youth reporting position, I got so excited. I was like, oh my gosh, this could be my opening to actually pursuing this. And so
so with that, what story did you produce this year and what made you want to tackle that?
My story was addressing the lack of sexual health education in North Carolina. And what kind of drew me to that topic in particular is I don't think it's a super addressed topic. It's a topic that isn't addressed by people who have the authority to address it. And it's important because there are so many students who just kids in general who haven't had access to this information at home. And by addressing this information and actually teaching it to students, they'll have probably, better relationships, healthier relationships, and healthier attitudes surrounding sex.
I want to say this was not something that I thought was going to be easy. I don't think it was easy, but you made it look like butter to get all of the, the interviews, the information to formulate the questions. Can you take me through that process of collecting the tape and who did you talk to and why?
The star interview for my story was with Chelina Morgan Lopez. She is a senior now at Sanderson High School, and she has a lot of background in actual comprehensive sexual health activism. Her main focus is around addressing the sexual harassment and sexual violence that is very commonplace, not just in schools, but in everyday life that we never address. I mean, we know it happens, but we don't actually address it.
So it was my freshman year when it started happening, first semester. I hadn't even really got into the whole high school groove yet. But I just remember one time I was, sitting in French class. I dropped a pencil, went to pick it up, and this dude felt like it was a good opportunity to start feeling me up. I noticed it when it happened to my mom, and I noticed it when it happened to my friends, but I didn't quite process it when it happened to me. And it wasn't until I had to sit down and talk about it that people were like, if it's not okay when it happened to me, how is that okay when it happens to you? And I kind of had to be like, I'm a survivor too.
And then I also interviewed Cal Baker, who is actually a youth advisor for Shift NC. And they brought a lot to the table about, how sexual health tends to be incredibly heteronormative. It doesn't address a lot of topics relating to LGBTQ+ identity or LGBTQ+, sexual health and protection.
I think it's very important that the youth are taking matters into their own hands kind of about sexual education, because what young people want to know is very different from what adults think they need to know.
And, you know, they addressed a lot of different viewpoints, but the final message was the same, that the sexual health curriculum needs fixing.
Yeah. So where does your passion come from to even produce something like this? I mean, you could produce anything in the world, you know, like you could have went any direction, but you went like head on. Why do that? Why attack this?
I feel like a lot of the issues that I address in my story, sexual harassment and violence and, you know, like, you know, lack of consent education, lack of transparency on sexual anatomy, the heteronormative standpoint in which we actually discuss sex in classrooms. I think all of that, it's very relevant to young people's lives. All of that is very relevant to young people's lives, and it's relevant to my life. I myself in the past have experienced sexual harassment and violence in school, in the place where, you know, we're supposed to feel safe. And so I think the reason that I kind of chose this line of questioning to actually pursue was because it's relevant to my life, and it's relevant to the people around me. And if people recognize that comprehensive sexual education is there to educate the same as any other life skill, then they won't treat it any different than, you know, the subject of any other life skill, because that's what it is.
This story hit close to home for a lot of us at Youth Reporting. It made me think back to my teenage years and those endless, miserably misinformed conversations my friends and I would have about sex. I wonder how many things I let slide that should have been addressed. How things might have been different if there wasn't so much fear around educating students on sex. And last, but definitely not least, we got Serafiel.
Hi, my name is Serafiel Sintayo, and I go to Panther Creek High School in Cary, North Carolina, and I'm a rising junior.
For his story, Serafiel decided to dig into the artistic process and how artists feel about displaying their creativity on social media like TikTok.
I wanted to find out whether the artists that I listen to and I look at their drawings and paintings and stuff, I wanted to know how they felt about social media, because it's like a controversial app and it could affect you positively or negatively. And I wanted to know, like, the artists that are close to me that I know and have, like, a relationship with, I wanted to know how they felt about the app.
Hey, can we get something in mic, please?
Yeah, dude.
I ended up going to the Summer in the Carolinas Music Festival near the end of July on a Saturday in Moore Square Park in Raleigh. And I contacted one of the people I just finished an interview with, and I knew he was performing there. So I went out of my way to ask him if we could get press passes, and I'm pretty sure we expected him to say no.
Yeah.
But somehow, I guess, he ended up saying yes. And one of the main interviews I did use was with my previously interviewed artist, Masho. I interviewed him right before he did his set, his 20-minute set, and I asked him about who was going to the concert, him or his character, Masho.
Masho, for sure. All
right. Hell yeah.
He, as an artist, has this character named Masho. He's a person that performs at concerts, and you're going to see in the YouTube videos for his music and stuff like that. And then there's also Abel, who is the one making the music, making the beats, singing, playing the guitar, and he's also the one that's doing everyday stuff, like hanging out with his friends. And he told us that he's using social media to make this character for himself, to sell himself.
okay, if I'm going to make Masho this character of sorts, or I'm going to utilize Masho and the platform that I have as Masho as a social media platform to push the music with the music just being Masho, but I'm the one that's like really doing it. And for me, Masho is just like, honestly, just a placeholder. It's just a placeholder so that I can be myself in real time and I can pick and choose the parts of myself that I expose to the public. And it makes it a lot easier.
Hey. When I say much love, y'all say more life. Much love. More life. Much love. More life. How you doing, Raleigh? Yeah. Hey, I'm gonna keep it a band with you.
My story is catered towards music listeners and art appreciators. Try to think of the artist before you as a listener decides to critique them, I guess. The way I want my story to go is, I guess I want everyone who listens to art, appreciates art, even if you don't do it professionally, even if you're just like me, who enjoys listening to music and looking at paintings and drawings, I want you to listen to my story, think about like anything you've ever said to an artist, and just reflect on it and change for the better of that. So if you do end up working for the Youth Reporting Institute, the one thing I would say is that your idea is yours. Like, you have the control over your story, and you know what is best for your story, too, because it's all in your own head. Like, everyone else is just trying to understand it as well as you do. To sum it up in, like, a sentence or two, I learned how to adapt at the Youth Reporting Institute, I guess.
Learning new ways to flex my mind, adapt, and truly get creative are only a few lessons I learned from the students this summer. It was a whirlwind, but the piece at the eye of the storm was getting a chance to develop these stories, to experience the authenticity of the students, and to get a peek into the communities they come from. Every year, I'm constantly inspired by these kids. So to wrap us up, I'm gonna pass it back to Ellie Stevens.
Yeah, I think there's always a story. Everyone has a story. Not to be like cheesy, but everyone has a story. And so, you know, talk to as many people as you can if you're interested in journalism. I'm sure you have a story, even if you don't think you do. Because this was literally just, you know, within my family. This was a story that, you know, my grandma had. So everyone has their own story, and it's just kind of up to you to find it.
Be on the lookout for all the Youth Reporter stories coming out in September, on the air on WUNC and online at WUNC.org. It's a lot of fire. So when you feel your car, laptop, or phone speakers heating up, know that's from the work our youth reporters put in this summer. We're here to amplify youth voices. So what's your story? That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Kamaya Truitt.